moon hanging low over my window. Shoebox of dreams hid under my bed. Follow the bright light, city of gold. I had to leave to realize all I needed was here. To climb wouldn't fix. Had to find my way, make my own mistakes, but you know that I had to go. Ain't no yellow brick road.
So before we get started with everything, I had a recommendation for you, Son. I think you're going to like this movie, and I recommend it to everybody. I'll have two recommendations. So there's a low-budget Scottish movie called Wild Rose. There's an actress called Jessie Buckley. She's had a breakout in the past few years. She's kind of risen to prominence. She was in the Chernobyl miniseries. Her star is definitely on the rise. Young actress. And it's about this girl, not a girl, she's like a, you know, young woman who has children at home, and she's basically a total screw up, right? But what she has that saves her is that she loves country music, and she's obsessed with making it as a country star. And Jessie Buckley does her own singing. Not only is she a great actress, she actually can sing great. She's a great singer. And the reason I recommend it is that it is, I'd heard about her performance and I was watching it just to be like, all right, I'll watch this for her performance. But it's one of those movies where it's like, it's one of those people that can't get out of their own way and they keep screwing up. And there's a lot of these type of like kitchen sink type dramas, especially British ones, right? So I kind of was like, okay, I kind of know what I'm in the mood, I'm going to get here. And what I'll say is she is that type of character. But the film constantly surprises me with the way the story goes. And it turns out to be a great mother-daughter movie. You know, there's not much here to sell. There's no big hook or anything. It's just great acting. It's just great relationships. It's a template to a story you think you know, and it just keeps surprising you. And it's great. I love it. It's called Wild Rose.
Sounds very interesting.
And the music and the beautiful singing. Her vocals are incredible in this. So she's a really, really impressive singer. And my second recommendation is if you are really impressed with her acting, the first time I saw her make anything was at the Montclair Film Festival 2 or 3 years ago with Stephen Colbert presiding over it. One of the movies they showed, they have a horror section. And they had a movie called Beast, which is based on a true serial killer story, which takes place in Scotland. She's the star of this movie. She falls in love with someone who is suspected there might be a serial killer. There's girls who are being killed in the countryside. And based on a true story, by the way, loosely based on a true story. And she gives an incredible performance. And I do want to throw that in there because I have my horror recommendations. If you guys didn't catch the first episode, I've been dropping horror recommendations, a separate set of episodes that are dropping into this feed for the rest of October, just so you guys have something scary to watch around Halloween. So check that out. I talked about Squid Game and I talked about Midnight Mass, both on Netflix, two hugely popular series on Netflix right now, which I recommend both highly, especially Squid Game. Very, very excellent. I definitely recommend that very highly. So definitely check that out.
I feel like they hear about it multiple times a day at this point.
It is super viral. So everybody's been watching it. And anyway, if you want to hear my thoughts on it, no spoilers though. I don't want to spoil it because I know it's brand new. I do definitely want to have a spoiler conversation about the series, but I want more people to get to watch it first. So for now, if you want to get my initial thoughts, check that out. It dropped over the weekend. And I did want to throw a horror recommendation in here called Beast. It's available on Amazon Prime, so it's easy to access. And also with Jessie Buckley. But if you don't like horror, then check her out in Wild Rose, which is a beautiful drama. And she's an incredible singer. And her vocal performances, I mean, just to hear her sing those sequences is really great. And have you been watching anything? I know you've been watching Succession. You're starting that off. I'm curious to get your feel for it early on. How do you feel about it?
Okay, so I am very early into Succession. I think I'm going to have to spend the rest of my waking hours watching Succession in order to catch up. But I will say, for a couple of years now, people have said to me, how are you not watching this? This is the perfect show for you. You would absolutely love it. You've got to watch it. And for whatever reason, I never did. So starting it now, I mean, yes, this show ticks a lot of boxes for me. Like, It's set in New York City, which I love. It's about wealthy people in New York City, which is a topic that is endlessly fascinating, the dysfunctional wealthy families of Manhattan. I am very curious to see how this goes. And, you know, I'm so early into the series right now that I'm really just at a point of like, wow, you know, none of these people are likable at all.
Yes.
which doesn't mean that I won't enjoy watching it. I don't. Yes. I think some people find that off-putting when there's nobody likable. It doesn't bother me in the least. But it is just interesting to see how everyone is unlikable in their own special way. And I'm finding the Kieran Culkin character very entertaining to watch.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So far, his annoyance with Cousin Greg's height is very humorous to me.
Oh my God. Cousin Greg, just to let you know, Cousin Greg is this one of the most incredible characters. I mean, everybody on this show is just, there's just one great character after another. But yeah, Cousin Greg, especially Cousin Greg.
Yeah, you know, it is really interesting so far, and I am very curious to see how this dysfunctional family continues to develop over time and the horrible things that I'm sure they're going to do to each other.
Yes, yes. So this is what I would tell you about the show. So a couple of things. I did not watch season one of Succession. Same thing. I'd heard all these things about it. Didn't watch it. Oh, and then I think it was season two. When season two had just started getting going and people were just raving about season two, I was like, all right, well, let me take the plunge, right? So I watched season one and I watched the first episode, the pilot, and I'm like, wow, that is a great pilot. I didn't think it was perfect. You know, I think there's some clunky things about it. But the reason I was so impressed with the pilot was that I felt like it set up this family dynamic and all these characters perfectly. Like, and now rewatching, by the way, I'm just rewatching it now myself. That once again, I cannot believe how incredibly they've set these characters up in this episode, in this very first episode. It's not like, oh, wow, these characters are so different now, the way they write them. That's like, no, these are the characters from day one. It's like they're perfectly defined, right? So I was really impressed with that. And then I felt like it meanders. The next 2, 3, 4 episodes, it doesn't really find its footing. There's a lot of really funny things that happen. The characters develop. You find out these like toxic interrelationships between these siblings, but it's just like more of the same. And I'd say right around the middle of season one, it starts to pick up this momentum that not only culminates at the end of season one, but then season two, it's like when you watch season two versus season one, every single one of these actors are so comfortable in these roles. Mm-hmm. It's almost feels like they're improvising their dialogue and it's perfect. And I'm sure it's very rigidly scripted, but with some improvisation. I know that they do have some improvisation, but it's so lived in that it's just like a flow state for everybody. And the second season is incredible. Like every episode is just perfect. And so that's what makes me so excited for where they're going to go. And by the way, the reviews just dropped. The critics and professional critics, I have no access to these early episodes, but I think the critics get to see like the first 10 episodes. Like they get to see almost the entire season and they're raving about how good this season is. So it's going to be a strong season.
Exciting. Oh, and I also wanted to mention, I'm excited to see Alan Ruck in this because I love him.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Ever since Ferris Bueller, I love him. Great. And Spin City, also a sitcom that most people have forgotten about, but Spin City was so great. Yes. And also, I didn't know that there was going to be an Asian guy in this. And you know, I like to watch stuff with Asian people in it because I feel like I'm supporting, Asian actors in Western media, which is an important thing.
He is like a thorn in the side of...
Seems like it.
Yeah. But he's a secondary character. It's like really, really within the family.
Yeah, I can see that.
The other thing I was going to say to you that is what's interesting about... You really have, like you were saying, like these are such unlikable characters. You really develop like this sympathy for the devil type situation watching this show. It really makes you, in a way, what happens when you are in a world where your actions don't have consequences? It makes it feel like from the outside that it's like, oh, this is like kind of like a gilded life or something. And it's like a gilded cage in a way, right? Because they're in a way so trapped by their circumstances. And this is where your sympathy comes in. This is what's so great about this, the way this show has evolved into being, is that because they are monsters, I mean, this is the funniest comedy on television by far. Wait till you get deep into season two. some of the humiliations these people suffer through, you will talk about them for the rest of the week. They are so hilariously funny. And you can easily laugh at them because they're just sociopaths, right? So why not laugh at them? But then their pain, the way that they injure each other, this like interpersonal relationship between these siblings is so relatable that you do feel sympathy for them. Like they're like, wow, like this person has been living in this toxic relationship their whole entire lives, right? So it's really, really fascinating. Yeah, this the psychology of the characters and the show, unlike what I was saying about, you know, Only Murders in the Building, where they raise these topics, they create a world where these things exist, but they don't explore them. That is the entire dynamic of the show, is this toxic, horrible relationship within this family and how they're all trapped. Even the ones with all the power are trapped in that, you know, like the dad is trapped in having to be this toxically masculine ruler of the world. They're all trapped. They're all trapped by this, all of them. And it's so that's relatable. But at the same time, when they humiliate themselves, there's nothing more pleasant to watch. anyway, it's great. And I hope you keep enjoying it because it's really good.
Yeah, stuff. I'm going to for sure.
So last week's episode, which we're catching up on, but bonus everybody, because we're starting late, we get to recap the current week's episode also. But last week's episode, episode number 7 of this season, The Boy in 6B, and The Boy in 6B is Theo, right? Theo Demas, who is a hearing impaired son of Teddy Demas, who we've seen in the background. And definitely, I mean, he was on my suspect list before, but this is much more complex than that. So the first thing that's interesting is, even though this episode, by the way, if anybody hasn't seen this, I'm not a huge fan of the current season of Evil. I have been, I do have a side podcast or within this feed where I'm just doing horror recommendations because there's so many horror things coming out this month and I'm a fan of horror. And I'll probably use that space to do a recap of the second half of season 2 of Evil. Not a huge fan of the season of Evil, but there was one great episode this season, which was all silent. And we get another silent episode here, right? So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And especially for someone like me who's very easily distracted, this forced me to keep my focus on the screen for every single minute.
There you go. That's one way to do it.
And, I have a very short attention span. Possibly something diagnosable going on. But yeah.
I had suspected this for a while now, but a theme in this episode and in the current episode, we're also going to recap the very current episode that just dropped today of the show. Once again, we have another POV character, and explicitly a POV character, because not only do we only see things that Theo could see, but the show calls this out, even though it's silent. At one point, he literally at the beginning of the episode turns to the camera, turns to us as the audience, and signs to us that people in New York talk too much.
Yes, I love that moment. Yeah.
So he's explicitly, you know, our POV character, and he's literally speaking to us at one point using sign language, but still. And so he is our POV character for this episode. And that's been a theme now, right? After the first 3 episodes, we have had new POV characters for each episode. I usually excerpt some of the best jokes into the audio of the podcast itself. Can't do that this week because I think there's only one line of dialogue in the entire show, which is the last line of dialogue, right? When Charles says Eureka or something, like when he figures out what the password on the phone is or something like that. But it's literally the only spoken piece of dialogue in the entire show. So what do we see? We find out a lot of things. We see Theo's backstory. He is deaf. His dad is frustrated by this, right? His dad loves music.
Yes.
He thinks if he plays the music loud enough, he'll be able to hear it. So like, obviously there's some tension around that.
The character being someone who's passionate about musical theater, I certainly am not passionate about musical theater, but I can imagine how important it would be for him to be able to connect with his family members about something like that. And, you know, to not be able to form the most basic building block for that connection would be very upsetting. But you know, also there are bigger things going on here.
But I do agree. I mean, that is very hard. I can only imagine, you know, if I was a musician, for example, and I love music anyway, by the way, like I think music is like one of my great pleasures. It's kind of miraculous. I think the fact that you can listen to something and someone else can listen to something, you have this like kind of shared experience. And I also get that experience from when I watch a movie, like I get moved, but I find it incredible that you can be moved by a song, can like change your mood and or make you experience, like take you on a journey in like a 3 or 4 minute, you know, nugget, right? So it's pretty fascinating that we can have this shared experience. Mm-hmm. And I find that, you know, I can only imagine how difficult it would be. Like my daughter loves music. Like when we drive around, I'll play like different mixes and she'll be like, I like that one. I like that one. So I make a little mix for her. Music mm-hmm. that we like, you know, I'm trying to keep her away from like top 40, although she likes some of that too. But I try to expose her to different things that I think we can have like shared musical taste. And I like that. I love having that shared experience. So I can only imagine someone who works in music, which is so passionate about it, that this must be a frustration for them. I don't know if the show's going to become that much deeper about it. They actually do delve into it in this very next episode.
They do.
But I don't think it's going to be something that's severely explored. But yeah. It is those moments themselves are kind of sad. You feel really bad for Theo.
He yeah.
wants to connect with his dad. And you see the frustration on Nathan Lane's face as yeah. well. But it's very good. And like I said, they're doing this all silently, which I think is very impressive.
Yeah, also impressive is the amount of people in Theo's life who have managed to learn ASL for one reason or the other.
Exactly. I think that's actually really sweet. People around the building and stuff, right, understand yep. some of the sign language. So yeah, it's a really, really nice. I guess he's lived there his whole life, right? So inevitably, he's going to build relationships with that. I think that's something you could speak to, right, from living in the city, that when you live in a building like that, you do get to know not necessarily all your neighbors, but you do get to know about the lives of the people who work in the building, right? So it's kind of interesting. And I guess and they yeah. also get to know the people who live in the building, right? They actually know a lot more about what is happening in those individuals' lives than sometimes their next door neighbors are, right? Because they're all caught up in their own traumas.
It's a very interesting relationship that we have with the staff, and everyone is different in how they approach them. Like, you know, for example, as you know, my mom lives in the same building I do. Our relationships are very different in that I feel like it's a little bit disrespectful or invasive for me to ask questions about their personal lives because they're at work, they're here to do a job. Mm-hmm. They don't need to be grilled about how many kids they have, whether they're married, where they live. Whereas, you know my mom, you know how she is.
And, right.
She can tell me their entire life story. And I'm not sure which approach is the right approach, but it is a very interesting thing where because they work in the place where I live, they know so much about my life. They know like, hey, you bought a desk, it got delivered today. They know like, hey, your kid started school because now you're taking a different route in the morning than you used to. You used to go to daycare across the street. Now you're going to school. It's in a different direction. Like they know so much about the minutia of my life. Hey, you ordered a pizza tonight. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there are no secrets from the building staff. They're really aren't.
I like that the show has the richness of its world. And I'm giving it credit for this. I'm serious about this, that it is going to include all of these things. As a matter of fact, once again, I keep teasing the current episode, but we get into this idea of fandom and how fandom like takes ownership of something because mm-hmm. they love it in the very next episode. Mm-hmm. So they have this richness of this world. They don't delve extremely deeply into any of these topics, but they include it all. And I do like that. I do appreciate that. I think it allows us to have that conversation, even that about how the staff has this intimacy with Theo because they've seen him for all these years. Mm-hmm. And it does make you reflect on the fact that exactly like you said, you have this cursory relationship with these people, but you see them every day. So over yep. time, they know you very intimately. And like I said,
absolutely.
They probably have friends across the hallway that you go to dinner with, that you go on walks with. But that the staff that you interact with for 5-10 minutes a day, because you see them every single day, they know you more intimately than your close friend neighbor does.
Absolutely.
It's a very interesting dynamic. Speaking of that dynamic, maybe I'll just segue right into it, because this show, given that it's silent and everything, and that we discover so many things through these kind of vignettes, I can't speak highly enough of how well I think I put this, they did this without using dialogue, but maybe we should just like dig into some of these topics they bring up. So speaking of this kind of divide between the staff and the people who live in the building is the Zoe character, right? Like, I think you already touched upon this when you were texting me, but she obviously has some significant issues. Not only does it turn out that she has this flirtation with Theo, which might, and I have a question for you, do you think that they were ever physical, or whether do you think it was purely a flirtation? And of course, the fight she's having with Oscar the night that she dies, where she basically is saying, I can't date you anymore, Oscar. I feel like I'm dating the staff or something, right? Mm-hmm. Which once again speaks to the fact of, here's these people, they all run the same circles, they all live in the same building, but she's the right type of person, he's the wrong type of person, right?
Right.
And anyway, so we don't know Zoe's psychology. She obviously has a lot of issues, but tell me a little bit about
She certainly seems like a horrible person. So,
yes. But she also, I think she also has more going on, but tell me your general opinion and what you think might be going on there.
Well, she did learn American Sign Language for her cousin, who is deaf. So she's not altogether a terrible person without any compassion. However, it does seem in this episode that she kind of gets a kick out of manipulating relationships, like, you know, a kick out of slumming it with the super son, a kick out of, you know, getting the boy from 6B very excited and flirting with him. You know, I certainly didn't come away from this with a high opinion of her.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. Maybe I'm giving her too much credit in her performance. She does seem to kind of, as she pushes Oscar away and then she interacts with Theo, she has this kind of spark of anger and ugliness in her behavior. But then she kind of almost feels like you don't want any of this anyway. And that complexity, I think, either it's just something the actress is bringing to the performance and it won't pay off. But I feel like there's more there that we will discover over time. And as a matter of fact, considering that this mystery may not yet be resolved, maybe there is more to that we'll find out.
That's interesting. You're giving her more credit than I did. So maybe.
The read of the character on the page, I think you're 100% correct. I think that the actress conveyed more there. Mm. And I'm hoping that it pays off. You know, maybe we get her backstory in one of these upcoming episodes. So, I mean, just to make things explicit, we find out, you know, in through these kind of side stories that Theo, and we're kind of working backwards, she had broken up with Oscar. They had this ugly fight. She had the ring, this ring that we have been trying to track down, this green ring.
Perhaps. Which she had stolen from Theo and Teddy's apartment.
So the Scooby group, a big gang, or the Hardy Boys, as they call themselves.
The Hardy Boys. Yes.
Yeah.
You're making pop culture references there.
I'm mixing it all together. So the Hardy Boys, it's more like the Scooby group gang than the Hardy Boys, but in their, you know, gender makeup. They have the keys, right? Oscar's dad has the master key, so they can go in, and they used to make a game of going to people's apartments and trying to guess, like, what's their lives, what are their secrets. So we actually see one of these. They come into Teddy and Theo's apartment. Theo doesn't notice that they're there because he can't hear them. So then he hides when he notices that there's someone else in the apartment. He hides into the secret part of the apartment, which we where Teddy basically ends up hiding things, and we'll find out what they're hiding there. But, and he peeks out, he sees her, she sees him, she sees his eye, I guess, through the wall, takes the ring and like goads him about it, right? Says like, I'm taking this, and then leaves with it. And it turns out that we find out also through this process that Teddy is stealing this jewelry from a funeral home, right? So they're taking, like, as they bury these people, is like, I mean, they literally at one point, Oliver and Mabel say that Teddy's a grave robber, right?
Well, and don't forget the little texting joke. He's a Gray Roger.
Oh, yes. He's a Gray Roger.
Are you having a stroke?
Yes. A grave robber. A Gray Roger. Yeah. Those are like texts I get from my wife, by the way. Kim always texts verbally. You know, she speaks on the phone. And there's it's all mistranslated. So yeah, so they find that basically, and for all intents and purposes, Teddy is grave robbing these folks who go to the funeral home. They take their jewelry before they get rid of the bodies, and they are keeping them in these urns inside of this secret compartment. And I guess they use the urns for transporting the jewelry. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but whatever that process is, he's keeping the jewelry.
As it requires a wall full of urns.
Yes, many urns. I guess they have to stockpile them for some reason.
Use the urns. I'm not sure what's going on there, but yeah. Yeah,
exactly. I'm not sure what the process is, but yes, they have many, many urns inside of this wall. Oh, and of course, the ring that Zoe stole is one of the stolen rings. So Theo basically says she has the ring, makes it sound like he gave it to her, right? Not that she stole it. Obviously, he doesn't want to get her in trouble at that point anyway. And the dad's like, we cannot let anyone see that ring. You know, it's stolen. If someone sees it, you know, we can all get in trouble. So he confronts her just after she's broken up with Oscar on New Year's Eve and the night that she dies. And he does get the ring back from her. And she gets really ugly with him, calls him terrible names. She starts pushing him. And she like laughs at him, right? At one point when he like said, I can get you a real ring if you want one. And she just laughs in his face and he loses it. She does push him first, but still that doesn't mean, you know, that's doesn't make it okay. He pushes- I mean, I only call that out not to say that he should have pushed her off the building. Although I think Sonia, you probably would have pushed her off the building. But just to say that it wasn't like he just coldly shoved her off the building.
Yes.
It was in the heat.
It wasn't a calculated murder. It wasn't. Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It was in the heat of the moment. And he definitely, even if he pushed her hard, he did not mean to push her off the building. They maybe meant to knock her down at worst. Right. Like, he, as a matter of fact, he's shocked like when she falls off.
Yes.
Speaking of his face, I was actually going to look up this up and I'm not sure if this actor is actually deaf or hearing impaired or not or whatever, but I think he gave a really great performance. Like his face is, he gives a great face. he gives a really great performance using his face.
It hadn't occurred to me either way, but I think it was a great performance. And also in connection with sign language, just an interesting aside, I lived with two women who had learned sign language to work at a school for the deaf. And they told me, Sona, you would hate it because when you do sign language, you are expected to be very expressive with your face. And you're the type of person that would get very self-conscious and feel very stupid doing that. But you need to be very expressive as you're signing. So it's very realistic as well.
I think you're right. And that's also the reason I wondered if he was actually hearing impaired. And that might be why he was so skilled, not only at the signing, but also at the
conveying things with his face. Yeah.
The other thing I was surprised about is when I see these actors supposedly in different time frames, they don't look any older or younger. And I don't know what they did to Theo, by the way. I don't know what they did to this actor, but he really does look very young in the flashback. Some of it, I think, is just his hair is like neater. Because, you know, and maybe it's just like I said, maybe it's just he's wearing a sweater and he's kind of shaggy in the present tense. But I was like, they make him look younger in these, as opposed to like Mabel. Mabel does not.
Yeah, Mabel looks the exact same. That's for
they
sure.
Didn't even bother trying to make him look younger.
I think they try and do stuff with Tim Kono's hair to indicate the pattern.
So, yes, and they make him wear a cap backwards or something stupid like that. Which hopefully he's not doing that when he's managing people's money. He definitely would not would not trust my broker if that was the case. And I mean, that's the meat of the plot. Oh, and of course, except for the very ending where at the end, Charles figures out that the password on the phone is Theo.
So stupid. I mean, I just don't understand why Tim Kono would expect anyone. I don't know why he would set this password. I don't know why he would try and send a message using this password. None of that adds up for me, but okay. Sure.
We'll talk about the current episode and maybe there's a slight explanation for it, but it is a convenience. I do agree. Oh, and they all end up locked up in the back of a truck and they're being driven away and Charles has cracked it. And, you know, he by the way, has been, and that's the last thing I want to talk about is his date with Jan, that he's been on this date with Jan all night long that went, you know, they spent the whole night together basically. And and of course he like turns on his phone and he has like 75 text messages.
For I loved that, how they just kept scrolling and scrolling. Yeah.
And then, of course, he's trying to get back to them. But when we cut back to them, we realize that they've been abducted by Theo and he's in the back of the truck. And that's the cliffhanger we leave on. But I don't want to end this episode without talking about the absolutely hilarious and silent, once again, sexy Scrabble game between Charles and Jan, which is, I just couldn't help but laugh because, and once again, it speaks to the quality of the writing, that even in their Scrabble game, there's the same goofy flirtations going on. So it's like a pitch perfect Scrabble game for their corny courtship. And that's where we leave it. Did you have anything else on that episode that you wanted to talk about?
No, I mean, I thought this was a great way to tell this part of the story. I really liked the viewpoint of it and all of moving the plot forward with no words. Like, I give them credit for that. That's a lot.
And it's kind of a tradition in some episodes. There's a famous episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, once again, making that reference, called Hush, where like this like spell falls on the town and no one can speak. So the whole episode is in silence. And then we, like I mentioned before, S is for Silence, the episode of Evil that came out this season. And there's other episodes of other shows as well, where it's kind of like
now
almost
that you
like
mention it, I think ER did an episode like that also.
I believe so. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's almost like a tradition of trying to like as a stunt, like as a, what do they call it? Like, as an obstruction, like a writing task, like how can we write an episode in silence? So this is another one, and this is fun. I had a lot of fun with it.
I agree.
What does it mean to be a fan of something? For me, it means undying, absolute loyalty. Being a fan is like being married. You don't quit, no matter how bad it gets.
Can't believe it's been another week without a new episode.
Okay, guys, why are you being so negative? Do you even like this podcast?
Love it.
It's a revelation.
Well, then trust the team, okay? You want stakes? You're going to get stakes. They're probably right around the corner.
All right, so that leads us to episode number 8. So the current episode, today's episode, which just became available this morning, was fan fiction. And we have another POV character, which is one of the fans. He's basically saying that when you find something that you really love and you become obsessed with it, etc., and it's all talking about like this fandom, and it kind of gives us the perspective of these folks who are now suddenly, you know, fans of the podcast, and they're literally camped out in front of the building. All four of them. It's a very small.
I loved it. Yeah.
A very small fandom.
One of whom is a child. Yeah.
Yes. One's very young. There's so many jokes about this, by the way. Like just like these little asides. At one point, one of the older people says to Martin Short, Oliver's Martin Short's character Oliver, as he's like leaving their apartment. By the way, I have to get going because I do have a job. And Oliver's like, I highly doubt that. I highly doubt that. So there's some interesting themes here that they speak of as well. Once again, just very cursory, this idea of how fandom, especially in this day and age, has become so rabid. Fans really feel like they own the thing, right? It's like you hear about this, like, you know, everybody wanted to see the Snyder cut of the Justice League movie. So we got it. Fans basically say, that's not the version of the movie I wanted to see. You have to redo it. Right? And it's crazy, but that's the world we live in now, right? And the second thing they touch on lightly here is when Detective Williams, that she says at one point, well, I guess that's how crimes get solved nowadays. How strange. And this is actually not uncommon, right? There are podcasts that have literally led to cracking cases. There was these internet sleuths that solved the Golden State Killer. It was partially solved.
Patton Oswalt's wife figured that one out.
She did, to a large extent. Okay. Yes, yeah, yes. Before she passed away, unfortunately. But she was in the midst of writing that book that became an HBO show when she passed away. She was writing the book, and she kind of was the leader of this group. But it was a whole team of internet sleuths. If you want to watch something, if you're curious about this as well, to anybody out there, there's also a documentary which is very grisly, so I warn you, lots of trigger warnings in this, but it's a true crime story called Don't F with Cats. I don't know if you've seen this one, Sona.
No, I haven't heard of it.
There's a documentary called Don't F with Cats on Netflix about this guy. Trigger warnings for all this conversation, by the way. I'm not going to go into details, but this person ends up going on the internet, on YouTube, and posting pictures in which he tortures and kills cats.
Oh, geez.
So these people, like in a Reddit board, they who are lovers of cats, basically start to watch these videos together, and they figure out who this person is. And what's so crazy about this story is that this is a fascinating story. It's really, really crazy, if you can stomach it. It's not, they try to show as little of the videos as possible, by the way. So it's not that bad, but just the content, just the concept is so ugly. But what's fascinating about this particular thing is that they solve the crime. They find out who the killer is. The killer has escalated by this point where he starts to kill people. So he becomes a serial killer. And it goes even more bananas than that. You'll have to watch to get into some of the grisly stuff that I want to get into here. But also what's fascinating is that he knows that this forum exists on Facebook. And it turns out that they only find out later on that he has joined the forum. So he's participating in these conversations where they're trying to find him. So it's pretty...
This ticks like every box on the profile of a serial killer.
Yes, exactly. It does. It does.
You know, like they join the group that's trying to figure out what's going on. They torture the animals before they move on to humans. Like that, I mean, come on. Yeah. What a stereotype.
He's so stereotypical.
What a cliche.
What a cliche. But anyway, just to speak to, without taking it to such a dark place, partially inspired by that story of this Don't F With Cats and that the popularity of that miniseries as well, which is a documentary miniseries, not fictionalized, that there is a lot of these like Reddit boards where people are out there trying to crack these mysteries.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And other things too, right? You know, like people are trying to figure out what the code in evil is. People are trying to, you know, people watch.
There's a Reddit board for everything.
Yeah, people watch. And not only that, it's just the way fandom is now. People used to watch Mad Men and be like, this is all about the Manson murders. It's like, there was never anything about them to man, but people invented their own mythology because that's the world we live in now.
Yes, absolutely. I thought it was so clever how they worked in the fact that the podcast has really taken off.
Yep.
And these fans are now like fully invested in getting to the bottom of this. They're very impatient that another episode has not come out.
Speaking of taking ownership of something, when they're like berating them on the streets, like they're like, oh, I can't believe I finally got to meet you. What are you doing out here? Shouldn't you be recording right now?
Exactly. And because unbeknownst to them, right, what we find out is that after Mabel and Oliver were thrown in the back of Theo's truck, they go and meet Teddy and Teddy threatens their lives and says, I suggest you put an end to this podcast and you do it by tomorrow. So they are pretty shaken up, understandably, and they return back to the Arconia to meet up with Steve Martin. And I love the scene where they where Jan answers the door. Yep. And they're kind of like, great, we're doing this now.
Yep.
because he's gone to get bagels. And so they say, okay, we'll just wait for him to get back. And now Jan is suddenly like completely incorporated into this story, uninvited by Mabel and Oliver.
I also love, by the way, that then, you know, after everybody's so annoyed that Amy Ryan is there, Jan, right, including Mabel, by the way, that minutes later, Mabel has invited Oscar already. Like Oscar was already en route.
Yes.
And then, of course, you have Oliver, who has nobody. So he recruits the fans from the street.
Exactly. So now everybody has invited someone and they're all even. And all of them are equally invested in like getting to be a part of this and putting the clues together and figuring out what's going down, even though Mabel and Oliver think they pretty much know exactly what's going on.
Yep.
And, you know, these people are just detouring them from what they've got to do.
All right. So I have a question for you now. Mm-hmm. And maybe this speaks to the fact that Teddy and Theo are not actual murderers, as you know, they're definitely criminals.
Yes.
Not actual murderers. Is that this is a horrible, horrible plan, right? To let them go home and say, I want to see a podcast tomorrow that wraps this up and doesn't point at us. If they didn't have a podcast, this would be a legitimate threat. But the fact that, I mean, honestly, if 100 people listen to their podcast, they just have to publish an episode and that's it. Like once you have a podcast that even 10 people have listened to that has revealed all these crimes about this person, like that's going to go viral, like instantly, you know? Like if they just made a YouTube video and stuck it out there, they probably would have had the Demases would have been arrested within hours.
Yes.
It's a terrible plan.
But it does go, as you noted right at the beginning, and maybe it goes to the fact that they are not murderers. So what else do they have, right, as leverage? Because they're not really prepared to actually kill them. Although this is at least the second time we've seen them threaten somebody's life, right?
But it could be empty threats, right? That's the thing, is it could be that they have, for example, they threatened Mabel telling Oscar that he's going to take the blame.
Well, they made that threat to Tim Kono, right?
Oh, but correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Tim Kono, who has helpfully left a video on his phone spelling out exactly what's going on.
Exactly.
Again, a little bit. I mean, I love this show, so I'll let it go, but okay.
Right. Like you said, the phone is kind of, you know, has everything on there, like kind of like as
so convenient.
Yeah. But I would argue maybe that is like when you say like, oh, the password was Theo. I mean, it does seem like he has been spending all this time really just building a case.
Documenting everything. So okay, really that's fair. You
know, so that might, like the phone itself might have primarily been how he was documenting all these things.
I mean, my life is in my phone. So, yeah. Okay. Like, I get that as far as the receipts and whatnot. Just the actual, like, spelling out of everything in the video and the apology to Oscar and stuff. It just seemed a bit contrived to me, but it's okay. I'll let it go.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. There's no doubt about that. Not any more contrived than the finale of Nine Perfect Strangers, though.
Oh, don't even start.
A little salt in the wound, but anyway.
So now they're all working together to try and get to the bottom of this.
They do,
it's become a party, right? Like, yep. Steve Martin's a little giddy about, like, his new girlfriend and his newfound love and his relationship and all of this, and they're having the pizza rolls, and Oliver is turning his nose up at the pizza rolls because he just doesn't want jam there at all. So a lot of passive aggressive comments about pizza rolls.
I love that Oliver has to go get some dip because to dip the pizza rolls at the dip because the pizza rolls are a little dry.
I mean, I will say, like, a marinara on the side to me would be like a given with pizza rolls. So I don't know if she provided that or not, but
I didn't see any.
Yeah, I could get behind it as far as like, yes, a marinara would be nice.
All of this dynamic is very funny. And I love this, you know, once again, speaking to something that is real, even in this very silly show, but it's like that kind of jealousy amongst friends, which I find very funny.
Oh, absolutely.
Where you kind of have like your friends and then what's this other person doing? Here you're throwing off the dynamic, right?
Yes. And like your project, that's your thing, right? Together. And now like this fourth wheel comes along and is acting like she's entitled to be there and entitled to have an opinion, and her opinion is just as valid as yours, and it is very off-putting. We've all been in a situation like that.
All these interactions are very funny, not only like that jealousy amongst friends like you see there, but also certain aspects of, just like the little pettiness that is there. Oh, but here's the first question I had for you. This is what I wanted to get back to. Just a random question. This is not, but can you explain this part to me? Steve Martin goes out and gets bagels, right? And he comes back and it's like, well, he only got enough for him and for Jan, right?
Except for those extra blueberry bagels.
That's my question. And he goes, well, sorry, I only have two. These three blueberry muffins are going right into the freezer. And I'm like, don't you have three extra blueberry?
First of all, so many things don't make sense. First of all, like, it's very non-New Yorker to get a blueberry bagel to begin with.
Yes, I agree.
So why? Like a plain and everything, a sesame, an onion, a salt even, but like a blueberry one is very non-New York, but okay. Then second, you can get a bagel every single day of the week in New York City. Why are you freezing any unless you're traveling and trying to bring bagels to somebody? Yeah. There is no reason. If you overbought bagels, then you might freeze them, but you wouldn't buy bagels specifically to freeze. So none of that adds up. It is very inauthentic, I have to say.
Yes, it's very strange. I do not know what he's doing with the bagels. And to your point, you have the best bagels in New York, obviously, but I'm in Jersey. There's still some really, really great bagels.
They're still good. Yeah, they're still good.
And there's nothing like a fresh bagel.
Oh,
right? So, I mean, if you can just walk outside to any corner and get a fresh bagel, why would you ever eat a frozen bagel ever? It's like crazy.
No, there's no reason. It doesn't make any sense. And of course, adding to that, and then why wouldn't you just give them to the people who showed up at your apartment?
They're right there. it's definitely intentional. So it's speaking to his character in some way, in the fact that he's like, like he literally is saying, I'm sorry, I don't have any extra bagels.
Because I bought these to freeze.
Except for these three, which I'm going to freeze right in front of your face.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that's a strange decision, but okay.
It was a very strange little aside. Also, one more aside that I wanted to just mention is I thought it was very cute how most of the fans, I think, were in tie-dye in homage to the tie-dye guy.
Yes.
OG tie-dye. Yeah, they had their own tie-dye hoodies. Yeah, exactly. To represent.
Exactly. That was very funny. This is actually a good strategy for them. They have that. They're on the clock, right? They need to publish the episode. They know that Teddy is expecting an episode to drop that exonerates him. But of course, they also feel
they're
like
up at 5:30 in the morning, right?
Yeah, they say all
crazy.
Night to
up
publish.
All night. Yeah. Exactly.
Theoretically, like we were saying before, if they can publish this and make an airtight case, then you know that takes Teddy out of contention. He's no longer a risk because. He's going to be too high profile, right? And they meet with Detective Williams, right? And she basically tells him that we need to. I like when Charles tries to pull off the whole Brazos talk, and she's like, "What are you talking about?" But she does tell him, give him good advice that she needs to know the who. They keep getting it wrong too, right? But it's the who.
Yeah.
The how, right? The who, the how, the. Why and the why now, right? Which is very important, right? Because it's not only why they did it, right? To be like, oh, he knows about their jewelry. Right. It's like, well, he's known about that for 10 years, right? So why now, right? The why now is very important. So I thought that was good. But of course, we find out they got the how wrong. And we'll find out by the end. They meet with Detective Williams. That leads them back to the apartment. And then that's when we have this whole menagerie of people there where, everybody brings in buddies. And it's not only, I think, that Oliver doesn't only bring the fans upstairs because he feels left out, which definitely is part of it, right? Because everybody kind of brought buddies.
Yes.
And he doesn't really have buddies. These are his only buddies. But also because they ask him a really valid question, being like, it seems a little convenient because you needed two people, right? Like, how does someone pull the fire alarm and someone's already upstairs, right? It has to happen pretty quickly. You wouldn't like pull the fire alarm and then just like run up 10 flights of stairs as the whole building is evacuating and think that Tim Kono is going to be there and everything's going to work out perfectly. You have to have a plan, right? So who else is on this?
What's going on with the trash bag that Tim Kono originally got in the elevator with?
Exactly. Which is something they bring up right when they bring him in the room. Very good point is that, he's on the wrong floor. So he was going through their garbage. What was he trying to get out of their garbage, right? So it was all interesting points that they raise. Things that they're not looking at because they feel, once again, it's like always a problem with mysteries in general, I guess. You basically make a story and then you try to shove everything into that story, even if it doesn't all fit. And that's where they should be listening a little bit more to Jan because she's trying to take them a different direction. Maybe intentionally, though, we have to talk about the whole Jan situation here as well. Simultaneously, we resolve a large chunk of this story, right? But there's still this dangling thing. We know there's three more episodes, not just one more episode. There's three more episodes in the show. So there's more to this story. We know for sure. And what we see now is that, the cops show up. They arrest the Demases. The episode has dropped. They stayed up all night long recording it. They put it out. People start listening to it. Detective Williams is waiting for that episode to drop so that she can use it as a red light, a green light, I should say, to go pick up the Demases. So cops show up, knock on the door, they take him away. And obviously those people are going to go to jail because they have definitely been committing some horrible, horrible crimes in stealing these. Right. They've been stealing these people's jewelry that they shouldn't be. They have this black market jewelry exchange going on. And of course, Theo also inadvertently manslaughters somebody and someone else took the blame for it. So that's also another problem, right? So all those things are legitimately true.
Yeah. I mean, manslaughter, by the way, is like almost by definition inadvertent, but yes.
Right. You're correct. You're absolutely correct. I was smart enough to use manslaughter and then was redundant in saying that. Right? And so all those things are obviously going to take him off the case, but they did not apparently kill Tim Kono because Detective Williams gets the toxicology report just as she's talking to Oliver. That's very funny. I can't accept it because of the language, but she swears on the phone and he's like, is that a good?
Yes.
Is that a good sign? It's like, yeah, that's usually a good sign. Very good.
Yeah.
But it turns out that he was poisoned and then shot. So someone had already poisoned him before they shot him. So the suicide was a cover-up to the poisoning.
Yes.
So obviously this was, and more importantly, is that potentially you need two people. It could have been the Demases, but we have the Demases already outside of the building. Even if they were the ones who pulled the fire alarm and someone else did the final part of the dirty work, at minimum, they're only partially involved with this, or possibly not involved with the murder at all. So that is where we're at now.
Right. And the callback to, it was the cat that was poisoned, right?
Yes, right. And the dog.
Right. And Oliver's dog was also poisoned. So we're coming full circle on someone poisoning people. And then we have what went on with Jan, which is, she was also honing in on the poisoning and asking a lot of questions about the poisoning and the neighbor who owned the cat, whose name I can't remember. And everyone got very irritated with her, right? While Martin Short is trying to stage a reenactment and like musical theater style and assigning everyone roles to play. She storms off, she's had it, goes to her apartment, finds the note that says, I'm watching you.
Yeah.
Somehow decides in true poor quality horror movie fashion to enter her apartment nonetheless.
Right.
You know, I would have gone right back where I came from, no matter how much of a tiff I had. But at least I know there are people there. So she goes into her apartment. Some amount of time passes. I don't know. Seems like maybe 12 hours, less than 24 hours, right?
Oh, definitely. I think that we're basically, they're up all night. She leaves in a huff and then they publish. And then that's when he goes to check on her.
Tasting their success.
Right.
Steve Martin, who I've been calling Steve Martin this entire episode because I can't remember his name.
Charles
says, you know, he tries to make up with her by text and says, come on, let's celebrate. He doesn't get a reply. He buys her a beautiful arrangement of flowers, goes looking for her and finds her.
Stabbed in the side?
Yeah, there was blood, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, laying on the apartment, looking like maybe she had just come from buying groceries. I think there was a bag with some apples, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, dun dun dun.
Exactly. That's
a dun, it's another dun, dun. Murder in the building.
If she's dead, we'll see if she actually died or not. You know.
Yes, that's true. It's not a That's why I was kind of pausing. It wasn't a foregone conclusion to me that she's dead. Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, speaking of that, I do like the way they wrap up the show.
And that concludes the final episode of Only Murders in the Building. We'll be back in the unlikely event another neighbor is murdered or we move to a more dangerous area. I'm your host, Charles Hayden Savage.
If someone else,
yes.
If someone else dies in the building or if we move to a more like crime-ridden area. that's the caveat for next season. And there will be next season, by the way, right? So we know that's one, there's one coming. But
So either they're moving or more people are trying this very high-end building on the Upper West Side. Yeah.
Oh, a couple points on the Jan note. So I had mentioned to you earlier the handwriting on these notes that keep popping
up. It's the same handwriting that Oliver found, right?
Yes. So here's the thing I wanted to mention to you. A, Oliver's threat. Same handwriting. And I thought it might have been Theo who did it, right? Then I'm watching you, same handwriting to Jan, right? And more importantly, remember when they were doing the duetting with the music? And I'm like, man, she got there very quickly to say like, hey, let's have dinner tonight.
Yes.
Same handwriting. So I didn't mention this to you last week, but I've been thinking because I looked it up and there was
You said you were going to check on that handwriting.
Yeah. And I forgot to get back to you.
I'm impressed. Yeah.
I forgot to get back to you on it. Same handwriting. So I suspected this earlier. I'm like, it's so weird that she got there so quick. I'm like, somebody, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like left them both a note. You know what I mean? So someone hooked them up. But why would someone be hooking them up? So anyway, there's more to this whole Jan thing. That meets the eye. So,
very interesting.
Yeah. So that's where we have things. And the note is another big clue that ties all these things, these other outside events together. So obviously there's obviously still somebody who is either involved in the murder or involved with the cover-up inside the building. And so they're still at risk and the story will continue, obviously. So.
Yeah, I mean, I really like how they've developed this so far and it's just been so much fun to watch. To the point that I actually find it kind of hard to talk about it because there's so many little things packed into a single episode that it's hard to even remember them all and appreciate them all properly.
So I would say that even if they don't land this mystery perfectly, I will still say it was very entertaining just for all the comedy and everything
else. So fun.
But what I was going to say was that if they really land the ending and it's very clever, they somehow surprise me in some way with like what we've been seeing and what's actually been going on, I would easily watch this again because there's so many little funny asides and little jokes that didn't pay off for two or three episodes later. Like I would just have a total joy watching it, binging it at the end, I think, if I watched it all the way through.
Absolutely.
And that might still be contingent on whether they really like surprise me or, you know, or they really do something really fun with the finale. But like I said, I'm pretty sure that if you do decide to like binge it again, there's so many little jokes that you just forgot were there because there's 100 of them per episode, you know?
So I know. Absolutely. It's so clever. It's a really, really clever show.
All right. I know we have to run. We have to wrap things up.
Yep.
And we will keep your ears peeled. I will be dropping another one of my Horror Corner episodes over the weekend. This week, I'm talking about Candyman, which I just saw recently, the Candyman movie. Also talking about Lovecraft Country, both produced by Jordan Peele, by the way. And I have some recommendations around Black-themed horror as well, including a documentary I'm just watching right now called Horror Noir, which is about like the history of Black horror films. And so check that out. I have lots to say about those Candyman and Lovecraft Country, both very interesting properties that didn't really work for me. But check that out over the weekend. I'll have my opinions there, a much deeper dive into those topics. And then, of course, we will be continuing our conversation of Only Murders in the Building. And then in 2 weeks, we'll have our first Succession Season 3 episode as well. So we'll be continuing our conversations of all those shows. All right, everybody. Thanks, Sona.
Cool. Talk to you later.